Here with us to discuss the many adverse outcomes associated with antipsychotic use in patients with dementia in greater detail is lead editorialist Dr. Rhea Kurbeck. Rhea is a professor of medicine and the division head of gerontology, geriatrics, and palliative medicine at the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland. Rhea, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Rhea, as we talked about in the summary that preceded this interview, antipsychotics are widely prescribed off-label for patients with dementia to manage behavioral and psychological symptoms. But safety and, frankly, appropriateness of prescription are real concerns, as you noted in your editorial. If you would briefly frame the issues for us with regard to efficacy, safety, and appropriateness in this patient population.
Sure. So antipsychotics can provide some modest relief and improve agitation in dementia patients. However, they are not universally effective and they pose significant risks. So the efficacy varies widely among individuals necessitating personalized approach. Regarding safety, these medications are linked to severe adverse effects, including increased risks of stroke and mortality, particularly in elderly patients. The stroke risk can be as high as 33% among dementia patients prescribed antipsychotics. And the appropriateness of these medications should be carefully considered, prioritizing non-pharma approach first and really reserving antipsychotics for severe cases after participating in shared and informed decision-making with patients and families.
And the study for which you co-wrote the editorial really expands our knowledge and understanding of the risks associated with the use of antipsychotics in patients with dementia. In the past, the concerns have been focused on increased risk for stroke and death, as you talked about, but these new data lengthen the list to include venous thromboembolism, including DVT and PE, MI, heart failure, fracture, pneumonia, and acute kidney injury. What's your professional reaction to these findings?
Yeah, definitely eye-opening and frankly quite concerning to see this expanded list of risks from antipsychotics use in dementia patients. Like you said, originally we were mostly concerned with stroke and death, but now recognizing additional risks. So this new information underscores the need for extreme caution when prescribing these medications and highlights importance of exploring other options like non-pharma interventions, in addition to trying to develop safer drugs. So the safety of our patients would need to be prioritized. And above all, you know, the paper is a call to action for more thoughtful and cautious management of dementia, urging us to always consider the full impact of our treatment decisions for our patients.
And tell me, does the age of the patient factor into the risks that we talked about?
Absolutely. The age of the patient is a crucial factor. Older patients, especially those I care for, the geriatric vulnerable patients, can be really susceptible to the side effects of these medications. The vulnerability sometimes for me means that I need to not give them the medicine. Many of those older patients, they suffer from multimorbidities and polypharmacy. So there's a higher threshold for prescribing these drugs for elderly patients, starting with the lowest possible dose to manage a behavior and monitoring closely. It's always essential to weigh the potential benefits against the risks.
And what about patient residents? And by that, I mean community dwellers versus patients living in skilled care facilities. We know it's an unfortunate reality that antipsychotics often act as chemical restraints to calm patients down to provide relief for their caregivers. Tell us about that.
That's a valid point. There's this bidirectional relationship between the environment that our patients live in and, you know, the behavior. And so our patients are driven by the environment, and that environment sometimes determines the treatment decisions. the setting in which a dementia patient lives can significantly influence the use of antipsychotics. So in community settings, where our patients live at home, there is even, you know, there's often an opportunity for personalized care with behavioral modification that can reduce the reliance on medications. Families and caregivers, they have flexibility to adapt the environment to the patient's needs, potentially decreasing the behavior that might otherwise be managed with medications. In contrast, patients in skilled nursing care or other care facilities may receive antipsychotics more frequently because these environments can be challenging. You have staffing constraints and complex needs of multiple patients living under the same roof. Unfortunately, antipsychotics sometimes are used to manage behavioral problems more quickly, especially in understaffed or overburdened facilities where they can indeed function as a chemical restraint.
And are there any differences in risk between typical antipsychotics like haloperidol and atypical antipsychotics like risperidone and quetiapine?
Certainly, there are some key differences between the older typical ones like haloperidol and the newer agents like risperidone and olanzapine. Typical antipsychotics are more likely to cause movement-related side effects like stiffness and tremors, and can also affect the heart's rhythm more severely. The atypical antipsychotics, these newer drugs, generally have fewer movement-related effects, but can lead to metabolic syndrome, weight gain, diabetes, hypertension, and they're linked to a higher risk of stroke, particularly in older adults. But both carry, you know, I always like to say that both carry a serious warning about increased risk of death when used in elderly patients with dementia. So choosing sometimes depends on the patient's specific health needs, past responses to medications. It really is important to keep a close eye on those taking these medications for any side effects that they might cause.
And Rhea, you were the lead author of a study that looked at the association between antipsychotic use and all-cause death in older patients without dementia or a pre-existing mental condition who lived at home. Tell us, what were your findings?
Yes, our study was published in the Journal of Gerontology Medical Science. This is the first large-scale study that highlights significant risks associated with off-the-label use, especially for patients with no history of serious mental illness or dementia. We analyzed data from, very rich data from the Department of Veteran Affairs, included over 730,000 patients over the age of 65. And our research uncovered that both typical and atypical antipsychotic medications are linked to a higher rate of all-cause mortality compared to those with no exposure. The mortality risk was higher with the use of typical antipsychotics, to a lesser extent, the atypical antipsychotics. The findings were particularly alarming for older adults without dementia or serious mental illness because they underscore the potential dangers of prescribing these drugs to a population already with an elevated baseline risk due to age and comorbidities.
That's a really important finding. And given your own research, plus those from the study in the BMJ, what's your opinion of the role of antipsychotics in the geriatric setting in general?
Yeah, we really need to take a step back and look at what's actually causing the agitation for those patients. It's not always as straightforward as it seems. Often, what might appear as agitation may actually be a sign of something else. We call it atypical presentation of diseases, something that's not necessarily require antipsychotic treatment. For instance, UTI in older population can present as delirium and agitation. Simply identifying and treating the infection can resolve the behavioral symptoms. COPD, heart failure, pneumonia, shortness of breath, all of those can be, you know, represented with agitation and delirium or something like full bladder constipation can lead to significant stress and change in behavior. So really, before we jump to antipsychotic, it's crucial to dig deeper and understand the root cause of agitation. It's about treating our patients with the compassion, thoughtfulness they deserve, ensuring that we're not just masking symptoms with the drugs, but genuinely addressing the root cause of their behavior.
And talk to us briefly about some alternative treatments to antipsychotics.
Yes, and so, you know, we talked about behavioral interventions, but we also were trying to figure out safer treatment approaches. So the University of Maryland is participating in a Libby study testing the potential benefits of two compounds extracted from cannabis plant, the THC and CBD, especially for managing agitation in hospice-eligible patients. And so the study inspired by challenges faced by a patient, her name is Libby, so far during her final days. The study goal is really to provide alternative treatments to ease suffering with fewer side effects, underscoring the deep impact of the existing treatment limitations for patients and their families. So the study is funded by NIA, and it's structured as a double-blind, multi-center, placebo-controlled, randomized trial, and hopefully making it the first of its kind to evaluate these substances as safer and effective treatment options for patients with agitation and dementia.
When do you expect to see this alternative treatment you're talking about for the agitation associated with dementia to be available for possible publication?
It's ongoing. We are still recruiting patients. There are, I want to say, 15 or 16 sites across the country. And the recruitment, we're starting to recruit next month. I think a couple sites started recruitment, but it's going to be, you know, a few years before we see a publication coming out. And I think it has to do, I think we know that cannabis is widely used as a recreational drug, but from a research perspective, you know, these are class one medications. So there's a lot of scrutiny, and the logistics of getting this complex trial up and running is just really overwhelming. But, you know, we're really excited about it.
I'll be awaiting that with great interest. Can you tell us if you've encountered in your clinical practice any case studies in the use of antipsychotics or the non-use of antipsychotics in patients who are agitated? Any case studies that you'd like to tell us about?
Sure. A couple of weeks ago, I had a patient who was admitted to the hospital with pneumonia. He was quite agitated. I think he had mild dementia, and then he came to the hospital, taken out of his elements and familiar environment at home, surrounded by the hospital environment with the noise, and he started having delirium, causing significant agitation. And to manage his distress, he had one-on-one sitter constantly by his side, and also started antipsychotics treatment. So during conversation with his family, I said what I usually say: I am caring for your loved one. In order for me to help, I wanted to know as much as possible. What can you tell me about Mr. Washington? And the family really did not mention his medical issues during this conversation. They mentioned his passion for Bill Monroe's bluegrass music and how he loved playing the mandolin. And so that really caught our attention. We reached out to integrative medicine team and put a speaker at his bedside to play Monroe's tune. And it was just an incredible response, where the agitation visibly eased, his confusion diminished, and he began interacting more with his surrounding, no longer needed the constant presence of the sitter at his bedside or the planned antipsychotics. So it really is simply an effective intervention, highlighting the power of familiar environment for patient care, providing comfort and healing. Sometimes spirituality we find to be very helpful. Sometimes a Bible in the background, or Quran or chanting, might provide some comfort. Social isolation and loneliness, we know the impact is really terrible for our patients. So connecting with family via iPhone or Zoom, is also very important. So it really starts with knowing more about our patients and try to normalize the environment around them as much as possible.
Really great points, Raya. Thank you for sharing that. Finally, what takeaway messages would you like to share with primary care clinicians about the use and misuse of antipsychotics to support these physicians in providing high-quality care to their geriatric patients?
I think we start with enhanced training for caregivers in managing behavioral symptoms without medication. There's a lack of training on how we de-escalate problem behavior, create distraction, staying calm, and using a soothing voice. But I think as a practicing clinician, there is one key message that I'd like us to really take to heart, which is exhaust all options before turning to antipsychotics. Start with non-drug approaches. Take the time to truly understand the patient in your care. Learn about their interests and what comforts them. For those who ultimately require medications, it's crucial to use the lowest effective dose, monitor closely, and ensure that everyone involved, patients and caregivers alike, to fully be aware of the potential side effects. I think at the end of the day, our goal is to provide care that's not only safe, but also effective, respecting the dignity and well-being of our patients.
Really great take-home messages. Thank you so much for joining us today, Raya.
You are very welcome, Tom. Thank you for having me.